idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening until 10 o'clock. And I need to remind you of my email address. I love getting emails from listeners. I get emails from listeners every week, and I always respond 100% of the time. So if you like the show, if you don't like the show, if you got a question, comment, if you just want to argue about something, I'm always up for that. Shoot me an email, byoung, that's the letter B, Y-O-U-N-G, at harrisdowell.com. That's the name of my law firm, Harris Dowell Fisher & Young, and that's byoung at Harris Dowell, H-A-R-R-I-S, as in Sam, D as in David, O-W-E-L-L.com. This week, FBI Director Christopher Wray, he confirmed something that I've been saying since January of 2020, and that's that the FBI believes that COVID-19 really did originate from a lab leak in China. This is the head of the FBI confirmed that. And while so many liberal pundits have tried to dismiss these findings and allegations in the past, I think the fact that the FBI director said this really gives credence to the story. It's not some alt-right theory. It's the head of the FBI under President Biden who's saying this. And yet, I think one of the most interesting admissions that came from Christopher Wray this week is that he said, and I'm quoting here, "For quite some time now, the FBI assessed that the origins of the pandemic are most likely a potential lab incident in Wuhan," unquote. So the notion, at least from my perspective, that the FBI has really had this belief for quite some time is really unnerving, because experts and commentators and pundits, everyone's been afraid to say that, what we've always known. Now, I think it was just last week or a couple of weeks ago, I played the famous clip from Jon Stewart when he was making jokes about it, but he was making the poignant point that if you've got an outbreak of a coronavirus next to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, what's the most likely source of that? And so this is something intuitively we've known for a long time, but Jon Stewart was just, he was almost canceled when he said that. And so I found it very interesting that when asked about it this week, that Jon Stewart had this to say about his redemption, or at least about the fact that what he said is now probably right.
It's not about certainty, or the larger problem with all of this is the inability to discuss things that are within the realm of possibility without falling into absolutes and litmus testing each other for our political allegiances as it arose from that. My bigger problem with that was, I thought it was a pretty good bit that expressed kind of how I felt. And the two things that came out of it were, I'm racist against Asian people, and how dare I align myself with the alt-right.
So this is what I think is fascinating about this. I mean, we can debate whether it came from a lab leak or not. But honestly, we don't really know. But I still think that it does. That's the most likely scenario. But this is the angle that is most interesting to me. I mean, for years, whether it's the media or the government or the mainstream media, has really treated anyone who raised this lab leak theory, they've basically said it's you're one of three things. Either you're a conspiracy theorist, you're a racist, or you're a racist espousing conspiracy theories. I mean, that's really been the attitude towards anyone who brought up the lab leak theory. I was doing an interview with a podcast. My goodness, this was in early 2020, and I expressed an opinion that that the most likely scenario for the origins of COVID was an accidental lab leak from Wuhan, China. And that episode of the podcast that I was on, I'm not going to mention whose it was, but they got kicked off of YouTube for that, because of what I said when I expressed an opinion about the origins of COVID-19, that podcast was kicked off of YouTube. Now, how absurd is that, number one? But number two, this brings back to something that I've been advocating for a long time. And that is, when you have censorship of private media, you're going to squelch not only free speech, but you're squelching the exchange of ideas. And ultimately, the bottom line goal here is to control what people think. That's the ultimate goal. And it just is almost to the point of angering me when people want to stop these conversations under the guise of protection, that you need to be protected from harmful ideas. No, you don't. We need to have the marketplace of ideas so that the truth can come out. And there's no better example than the COVID lab leak theory. Because if that turns out to be true, and I'm convinced with 100% of my being that it is true, because up to this point, there's been no legitimate foundation or origin found in nature for COVID-19. And in every other pandemic we've ever had in the history of modern science, science has been able to find the origin of that pandemic, but not so with COVID-19. Why? Because it was most likely created in a lab like two blocks from where the first person was recorded having COVID-19. But the point is, again, we can't prove that, but we can prove that the truth was squelched by the mainstream media. We can prove that people like Jon Stewart were canceled for expressing an idea about the origins of the greatest pandemic to strike the earth in modern times. And to me, that demonstrates this is the poster child for why censorship is an awful, terrible, misguided idea. And my hope is that, and I think it's a futile hope, but my hope is that we'll learn from this incident and say, you know what, we shouldn't be squelching ideas. We should be encouraging vigorous debate so that the truth comes out in that marketplace of ideas. Speaking about the marketplace of ideas, we're going to take a break here. But coming up next, have you heard of ChatGPT? This is something I've been playing with for the better part of a month now. It's amazing. It's all the rage because this chatbot can talk and converse just like a real person. But what are the potential dangers with an almost sentient computer system? So we discuss this next with George Rosenthal of ThrottleNet right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. One of the things, I'm a nerd, I'll just leave it out there at that, because one of the things that I love checking out here recently is something called ChatGPT. It's all the rage, but are we actually creating new tech issues that we've never faced before? So anything that we have that's tech-related, I always want to go to the co-founder of ThrottleNet, friend of the show, George Rosenthal. Hey, George, great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, Brad. Thanks so much for having me on.
Sure, my pleasure. First of all, let's just lay the foundation. What is ChatGPT?
Okay, so well, think about it like when, and I hate to say the words because it's going to activate a lot of people's devices out there, but I'll whisper it. Her name is Siri or Alexa. If you say any one of those two, I don't want to say it loud because everybody's devices activate.
I know. In my house, we call her Eliza just to make sure that it doesn't kick in.
I like that. That's good. Well, that actually, to me, was the first interaction I really had with AI, artificial intelligence. And that kind of blew my mind. And it got better and better every year as it's gone on. And now it's gotten to a whole different level through an organization called OpenAI. And they have now been funded billions and billions of dollars from Microsoft to a bunch of other companies. But in November, they released this application called ChatGPT. And I cannot stress enough how mind-blowing it is that you can ask it to write a term paper or an academic paper or anything that you can think of that you need written, and give it some parameters, give it a little bit of direction, and within seconds, it will put out a piece of work that is perfectly written, the grammar is immaculate, The punctuation is immaculate. And you can go in and tweak it yourself, of course, copy and paste a word, but it is changing everything. And it's very scary in some ways, but it's very, very powerful in some ways, in the way that sooner or later you're going to be able to call your credit card company or whatever service it may be, and AI will sound and talk like a human, but you won't know it's not a human. And it will solve problems for you right there on the spot via the phone, text, chat, you name it. But you don't realize you're not talking to a person. So that's the fun side. The scary side is now hackers are using it, and they're from all over the world. So imagine, you know, if you're in India, you're in Russia, China, what have you, and you don't speak perfect English. Your grammar's not that great. So when you write a phishing attack email and send it out, everybody here in Missouri is going to look at that and go, okay, I can tell this is a fake email. The grammar is not so great. The punctuation is not so great. But even today, I just tested it out. I wrote a phishing attack email that was posing as UPS. And within 10 seconds, it had written an email for me in perfect English.
Wow.
And it was a perfect phishing email that I could have sent out with a link with a fake tracking number that then would have infected whatever company network the employee had clicked on that link.
And I want to get to some of the horrors of this in a few minutes. Of course, we're talking to the co-founder of Throttle.net, George Rosenthal. And George, I assume I started playing with this ChatGPT probably at the end of December. And I've spent some time. I hate to admit how much time I've spent on this because it's been a lot.
But I assume
from a tech perspective, I assume that there's just massive data sets here that are fed into the computer algorithm in order to produce the results that it produces.
Yes. In fact, it's searching through the internet of every single piece of written text ever put out on the internet. So it has access to all of that. What's really, really crazy is that they're saying in months, I say they, meaning Microsoft and the major investors, along with, and now chat, just so everybody knows, Open AI is an organization that is basically having an open source. So people can contribute to this ChatGPT and make it better and better and better. So that's why they're estimating in months, you will not be able to recognize the difference between a human and ChatGPT as far as the writing goes. And then what's wild is that it can take different images on the internet. It searches the whole internet for images and can now draw artwork. All you have to do is give it a little bit of direction. It'll draw a picture for you based on other images it has seen and saved throughout the entire internet.
So we're actually getting close to the famous mathematician, early computer scientist Alan Turing had what's called the Turing test. Computers get smart enough that you can't determine whether or not you're talking to a human or to artificial intelligence, we're getting very close to that then, aren't we?
We are actually there, almost there. And here's another fascinating thing that ChatGPT blew me away at. It recently passed the level 2 interview for a Google software developer. And passed it with flying colors, meaning that it took the questions from a job interview at Google, answered the questions with written software code, and the code worked.
Wow.
So you now have software writing software.
Right.
It's fascinating.
Sure, because then, of course, that could be exponentially, that creates the exponential growth that everyone's always been concerned about from the Terminator movies, you know, where you've got computers creating computers and technology creating technology. Here's the one thing that I did, George. I'm a Star Trek nut, okay? I went to ChatGPT and I said, write a short story about Captain Kirk and Captain Picard going on vacation together. And it wrote like a 750 word short story. It was very, very interesting, but there was some incorrect information in there that they had about Picard and Kirk that only a true Star Trek aficionado like me would pick up on. I guess my question is this: accuracy can be somewhat of an issue with ChatGPT, can't it?
100%. In fact, that's how I believe it was a Yale professor, or maybe it was Harvard. One of the Ivy League schools, the professor caught a student because they had the ChatGPT said that a historical event had happened at this particular date in this particular location, and it hadn't happened then or there. So that is one way that the professor caught him. Then the student admitted that he used GPT to write his paper, and now they're changing to all oral tests. So there's no more written papers that need to be turned in. You're going to have to know the information and stand up in front of the class and tell everybody. So there are a lot of downsides to what's going on, but there's a lot of amazing things that are going to happen in ways that your car will be able to talk to you. Your car will be able to solve problems for you while you're driving. Your appliances will be able to examine what's going on in the refrigerator with dates of food being outdone and then tell you automatically when you need to go get new food. There's a lot of really cool things coming. But there's with that, there's always some bad people that try to find a way to use it in a malicious fashion.
And that's what I want to talk about now. We're talking to the co-founder of ThrottleNet, George Rosenthal. And at least you've already highlighted one of the issues by threat actors, by someone writing a phishing email that otherwise would be in broken English, but they can use ChatGPT to make it sound like a Native American, not a Native American, but an American, a person from the United States actually wrote it. But actually, ChatGPT can be used to write malicious code too, can't it?
Yes. And so entry-level hackers, or what we call the wannabe criminals that are wanting to get into the industry in a bad way, if they don't know how to write code in a high, high advanced level, they can now use ChatGPT to do that, which is kind of dangerous because now you've got a bunch of entry-level people writing code to hack into your networks, to get into your systems, and then hold your files for ransom. So I think the ransomware problem in this country is about to get worse. And here's why. The average person, I think the most advanced person very, very soon will not be able to tell the difference between a phishing email from a bad person and a regular email from your friend down the hallway. So it's going to get really, really spooky in that way, which leads me to the point of how do we protect ourselves? Because if it's going to keep getting more advanced and more advanced, you just have to put up more walls and make sure that your personal life is secure, that your business life is secure, and that you have tools in place to handle it. Because the amount of threat actors that are going to now try and get paid by locking up your files and doing some bad things to you is going to increase.
And I got to drop another Star Trek reference here because
you
mentioned something that triggered a thought. There's a great Next Generation episode where Geordi LaForge and Data are pretending to be Sherlock Holmes and Watson. And of course, Data, the android, solves the entire mystery in the first 5 seconds. And Geordi's upset. So he tells the computer, create a villain that can defeat Data. Now, he doesn't say create a villain that can defeat Sherlock Holmes. He says create a villain that can defeat Data, and we get this supervillain called Moriarty. Now, the reason why I bring that up, George, because I know you like Star Trek, but the reason why I bring this up is that we now can have ChatGPT or artificial intelligence create code that perhaps, whether it's code in terms of encryption code or code that can break through encryption, we've got now artificial intelligence that can actually write computer code.
Absolutely. And write computer code along with things that no one would really think about a computer writing. For instance, if you just had an idea for, let's say, an episode of Star Trek, and you give ChatGPT a few scenarios, you say, I need you to write a 20-minute TV episode that includes these characters with this story plot, go. It will literally, and I've done this myself, it will say, enter actor into hallway, and it will set the scene and write the entire episode step by step for you, and then you can copy and paste it into Word and do what you want with it. So screenplays are going to be written initially by ChatGPT. So you could literally create your own episode of Star Trek with whatever scenarios you want, and it will create it for you
in
perfect English in real time. Now, you can pay $20 a month. ChatGPT finally started charging. I couldn't believe they were doing this all for free. But if you pay $20 a month, you have unlimited access to write as many chat conversations as you want. You can use it for free, but you'll be at the back of the line if the servers get busy, it'll shut down. But yeah. I would highly encourage you to go to open.ai. It's open.ai. ChatGPT, you'll see the button there. It just says try it for free. If you can't get in, you'll have to try it different times of the day. But it is a fascinating yet kind of scary scenario
yes.
of computers being able to write and solve math problems immediately, have conversations with you based on any topic you can think of. It can give you recipes for food all the way to code that could hack into whatever it may be. I mean, for goodness sakes, a computer software program passed a level 2 interview for Google software developers. That's fascinating to me. That blows my mind.
Stunning.
Because it's code being written by code. Where does that lead
over time?
Right. And so where does this go as humanity progresses? I think it's going to be into every device we use. You're going to have AI, and not just your car, but you're going to have AI, artificial intelligence, in your TV, in your refrigerator. And people say, well, why would I need artificial intelligence in my refrigerator? It would tell you everything from the dates your food's going mm-hmm. bad, trends of things your family likes to eat, and automatically suggest it on your shopping list. There's so many interactive things that are about to happen.
Yeah, the possibilities are endless.
Intelligence.
Yeah, the possibilities are endless. George Rosenthal, really co-founder of ThrottleNet. Hey, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon to talk about such a mind-blowing topic.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Good to talk to you, George. Take care.
Thank you, Brad. You too.
And in addition to the things that George said, you know, the legal issues here are immense, because if ChatGPT or artificial intelligence is writing stories, can ChatGPT or can a computer own a copyright interest in a work of art? And the courts have said, no, they can't, that you have to be a human, because monkeys take pictures, but monkeys can't have a copyright. So you got to be a human. So who owns the copyright in all this? We don't know. We're going to have to figure this stuff out. And hopefully lots of lawyers will get paid as we figure this process out. And that's always my wife's angle, is that it's always good when the lawyers get paid. So, yes, I have to agree with her on that. Hey, Texas has launched a new initiative to fight illegal immigration. But what is it? And the bigger question is, will it be effective? Michael Chapman from CNS News will join us next for all you need to know regarding the battle to protect our borders. Next on KMOX. Immigration, it just continues to be one of the most vexing issues in our country, seemingly because of the refusal of the Biden administration really to do anything at all about this issue. So joining us to discuss this is Michael Chapman with CNS News. Hey, Michael, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
In the absence of leadership from Washington, D.C. on the immigration debacle, Texas is actually doing something about it. Tell us about that.
Yes, Governor Abbott, Republican governor of Texas, had complained quite a bit about the lack of cooperation and help from the Biden administration on dealing with all the illegal immigrants and drugs and crime that were coming across the border. So he finally set up his own state-level operation called Operation Lone Star. And that was launched in March of 2021, and it's been fairly successful, according to the governor's office. It's a division that runs out of the governor's office and is answerable to Governor Abbott, but it involves using the Department of Public Safety in Texas, as well as the National Guard and also the Texas Military Department personnel from those offices. And they're allowed to, they can't, of course, stand at the border and enforce the federal laws on immigration, but they can go after illegal immigrants, people who are in the country illegally, and drug dealers and human traffickers and so on, in areas in Texas. 53 counties so far, from what the governor's office says, these are what they call high threat areas, where there's a lot of a lot of illegal activity and illegal movement of migrants going on. And under that state declaration, the governor can send in the National Guard and the military personnel that he deems as necessary to go after these folks. And in their latest press release, which we reported on last week, since I guess it's been about May of 2021, they have arrested or apprehended at least 348,000 illegal immigrants.
That is a stunning. That's a stunning number. 348,000 apprehensions.
Yes. Yes, just in Texas.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive. It's quite impressive. And it doesn't get a lot of attention on the national media, I think, for obvious reasons. I think a lot of the liberal media don't want other states to follow suit or to give this much attention across the country.
Yeah, well, CNS News, and this is what I want to get to next, because CNS News recently reported that Texas, in addition to this 348,000 apprehensions at the border, that Texas has also seized more than 361 million doses of the deadly drug fentanyl. So in the absence of these seizures by Texas, this fentanyl could have been distributed and killed untold numbers of children or young adults across the country.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a fact. That's not hypothetical. That's the amount of drugs, according to their latest press release in terms of what the fentanyl they captured. They also captured marijuana and cocaine and other drugs, but the fentanyl, which is considered, as you know, and every, I guess most people know, is extremely deadly. And it was caught in Texas and didn't get to be distributed throughout the country, and probably I'm assuming save some lives.
Absolutely. And, well, what does Texas Governor Abbott say about the failure of the Biden administration to do anything about this border crisis?
Well, he's used language like you're using, the failure of the administration to do anything, and he has complained publicly many times in letters, open letters to the administration, because I assume that private conversations or conversations behind the scenes were not getting anywhere. So he went public with it. And he has said that the Biden administration refuses to secure the border. And these policies are just further, it's a broader invitation for illegal immigrants, drug dealers, human traffickers, and so on. And he's trying to do everything he can as the governor of Texas to try to secure the border and try to protect the people in Texas, but even also to protect, a lot of these folks, they're coming illegally, but he's trying to protect them as well, because there's human trafficking, there's crime, there's drugs, and he's trying to deal with it in a legal, orderly fashion. And the Biden administration, from everything the governor has said publicly, is just ignoring him. And a lot of the liberal media criticized him when he created this program, because he has National Guard folks out there with Humvees, and they're tracking these people down, and they're catching them, they're arresting them, and a lot of the media do not like to see that.
We're talking to Michael Chapman with CNS News, and listen, CNS News has been really at the forefront of covering a lot of this news coming from the border regarding the border crisis that the mainstream media just refuses to cover. And Michael, we hear about the cities and states that whine when 48 immigrants are transported to the Northeast, but what we're seeing in Texas, it's actually producing tangible results instead of just complaining about the issue.
Absolutely. These are real, solid facts. This isn't theory. This isn't a hypothesis. You know, what could happen, what we could do. They are stopping these people, and those folks that need to be turned over to federal Customs and Border Patrol, or that happens. And then there are others, as he mentioned in the press release, there have been about 24,000 criminal arrests. It doesn't provide all the details, but I assume a lot of those were drug crimes. But also other criminals who are sneaking back into this country are getting arrested. And those are real, that's real data. You can track that and you can watch it and you can see what's happening. And it obviously, as you mentioned very early on, he's stopping these folks and preventing a lot of the really negative or criminal consequences from spreading out into the country. And, I think as a governor, he's doing what he should be doing.
Exactly. To protect his people. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
We commonly hear of areas being declared as disaster areas after a hurricane or tornadoes or earthquakes. But you mentioned this a few moments ago, Michael, and Texas has actually declared some border areas as disaster areas because of the influx of illegal immigrants.
Yes. In May of 2021, Governor Abbott issued a disaster declaration. And from what...
Immigration, it just continues to be one of the most vexing issues in our country, seemingly because of the refusal of the Biden administration really to do anything at all about this issue. So joining us to discuss this is Michael Chapman with CNS News. Hey, Michael, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
In the absence of leadership from Washington, D.C. on the immigration debacle, Texas is actually doing something about it. Tell us about that.
Yes, Governor Abbott, Republican governor of Texas, had complained quite a bit about the lack of cooperation and help from the Biden administration on dealing with all the illegal immigrants and drugs and crime that were coming across the border. So he finally set up his own state-level operation called Operation Lone Star. And that was launched in March of 2021. And it's been fairly successful, according to the governor's office. It's a division that runs out of the governor's office and is answerable to Governor Abbott. But it involves using the Department of Public Safety in Texas, as well as the National Guard, and also the Texas Military Department personnel from those offices. And they're allowed to. They can't, of course, stand at the border and enforce the federal laws on immigration, but they can go after illegal immigrants, people who are in the country illegally, and drug dealers and human traffickers and so on. In areas in Texas, 53 counties so far, from what the governor's office says, these are what they call high threat areas, where there's a lot of illegal activity and illegal movement of migrants going on. And under that state declaration, the governor can send in the National Guard and the military personnel that he deems as necessary to go after these folks. And in their latest press release, which we reported on last week, since I guess it's been about May of 2021, they have arrested or apprehended at least 348,000 illegal immigrants.
That is a stunning number, 348,000 apprehensions.
Yes. Yes, just in Texas.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive. It's quite impressive. And it doesn't get a lot of attention on the national media, I think, for obvious reasons. I think a lot of the liberal media don't. Mm-hmm. Want other states to follow suit or to give this much attention across the country.
Yeah, well, CNS News, and this is what I want to get to next, because CNS mm-hmm. News recently reported that Texas, in addition to this 348,000 apprehensions at the border, that Texas has also seized more than 361 million doses of the deadly drug fentanyl. So, in the absence of these seizures by Texas, this fentanyl could have been distributed and killed untold numbers of children or young adults across the country.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a fact. That's not hypothetical. That's the amount of drugs, according to their latest press release in terms of what the fentanyl they captured. They also captured marijuana and cocaine and other drugs, but the fentanyl, which is considered, as you know, and I guess most people know, is extremely deadly, and it was caught in Texas and didn't get to be distributed throughout the country, and probably, I'm assuming, saved some lives.
Absolutely. And, well, what does Texas Governor Abbott say about the failure of the Biden administration to do anything about this border crisis?
Well, he's used language like you're using, the failure of the administration to do anything. And he has complained publicly many times in letters, open letters to the administration, because I assume that private conversations or conversations behind the scenes were not getting anywhere. So he went public with it. And he has said that the Biden administration refuses to secure the border. And these policies are just further, it's a broader invitation for illegal immigrants, drug dealers, human traffickers, and so on. And he's trying to do everything he can as the governor of Texas to try to secure the border and try to protect the people in Texas, but even also to protect, a lot of these folks, they're coming illegally, but he's trying to protect them as well, because there's human trafficking, there's crime, there's drugs, and he's trying to deal with it in a legal, orderly fashion. And the Biden administration, from everything the governor has said publicly, is just ignoring him. A lot of the liberal media criticized him when he created this program, because he has National Guard folks out there with Humvees, and they're tracking these people down, and they're catching them, they're arresting them, and a lot of the media do not like to see that.
We're talking to Michael Chapman with CNS News, and listen, CNS News has been really at the forefront of covering a lot of this news coming from the border regarding the border crisis that the mainstream media just refuses to cover. And Michael, we hear about the cities and states that whine when 48 immigrants are transported to the Northeast, but what we're seeing in Texas, it's actually producing tangible results instead of just complaining about the issue.
Absolutely. These are real, solid facts. This isn't theory. This isn't a hypothesis. You know, what could happen, what we could do. They are stopping these people, and those folks that need to be turned over to federal Customs and Border Patrol, or that happens. And then there are others, as he mentioned in the press release, there have been about 24,000 criminal arrests. It doesn't provide all the details, but I assume a lot of those were drug crimes. But also other criminals who are sneaking back into this country are getting arrested. And those are real, that's real data. You can track that, and you can watch it, and you can see what's happening. And it obviously, as you mentioned very early on, he's stopping these folks and preventing a lot of the really negative or criminal consequences from spreading out into the country. And I think as a governor, he's doing what he should be doing.
Exactly, to protect his people. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
We commonly hear of areas being declared as disaster areas after a hurricane or tornadoes or earthquakes. But you mentioned this a few moments ago, Michael, and Texas has actually declared some border areas as disaster areas because of the influx of illegal immigrants.
Yes. In May of 2021, Governor Abbott issued a disaster declaration. And from what I've read so far, it covers up so far 53 counties in Texas, and most of them are on or near the border. And that gives him the authority to deploy the Texas National Guard to the border and the other state security personnel that I mentioned, Department of Public Safety and the military department. Yeah, under that disaster declaration, he can do that. And that's what he's done. And some folks don't like it, but, he's doing what he thinks is the best thing to do.
That's fantastic. We're talking to Michael Chapman with CNS News. And, Michael, do we know or have any idea of how many illegal immigrants were apprehended at the border last year in total? And not just in Texas, but Do we know how many were apprehended in 2022 across our southern border?
The number that I've uncovered is it's from the Department of Homeland Security, but it was also reported on by Judicial Watch, which is a government watchdog group, and they write a lot about the border. And the latest numbers I have are that 2.4 million immigrants were apprehended in 2022, and that is up from 1.7 million in 2021. So those are both record breaking numbers.
Yeah, it's just stunning because Michael, we're here in the St. Louis area, and the entire St. Louis metropolitan area is 2.5 million. So it's as if the border has they've apprehended 2.5 million, meaning the entire St. Louis metropolitan area coming across the border in 2022.
That's correct, and you have to keep in mind that those are only the folks they caught.
Exactly. We have no idea how many people were not apprehended.
That's right. It's crazy. The border essentially is wide open, and the numbers show it, and it's absolutely incredible what's happening.
The other thing that's incredible, and you wrote about this in your article at CNS News, is the cost. Now, we consider these numbers, and we're throwing around big numbers of people who come across the border, people who are apprehended, and it's staggering. But even more staggering is the cost. What does this cost the United States per year to deal with this illegal immigration problem?
Well, the number that I was able to dig up, I got from an organization called the Federation for America Immigration Reform, or FAIR, which have been around for quite some time, and they track the illegal immigrants problem. They've been doing that for many, many years. And they estimate that the cost to the U.S. taxpayers of dealing with illegal migrants or illegal aliens every year is about $132 billion every single year.
I want to make sure folks get that, $132 billion.
Yes, it's insane. It's crazy. And then there are all the so many other related costs that we can't really calculate when illegal aliens commit crimes, murders and rapes, drug trafficking that go down the line and go downstream and affect so many other aspects of our society. And it's, I don't know how you necessarily can measure those.
It's incalculable.
You know? Yes.
Well, I want to applaud you, Michael Chapman from CNS News. I want to applaud you for actually having the guts to cover this issue when so much of the mainstream media simply ignores it. If folks want to follow what you and others at CNS News are reporting about this ongoing border crisis, how can they find you?
They can find us online at CNSnews.com. We're also on Facebook. CNSnews.com and Twitter, and also a number of other sites, I think Rumble and Gab and Getter. I don't know all the social sites, but certainly on Facebook and Twitter and Rumble, and then also the website. They can find all our stories there, and we have a large archive of materials.
Very good. Michael Chapman, CNS News, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Coming up, we're going to have to take a break here. Coming up after the break, I want to talk a little bit about the student loan issue. Because just this week at the Supreme Court, we heard oral arguments on President Biden's attempt to basically not really forgive student debt, but to transfer that debt to the rest of the taxpayers of this country. I'll break it down legally, the oral arguments, next here on At Your Service. We are talking about money here on Camo X. Brad Young back for the final segment. And just this week at the Supreme Court, We heard oral arguments on the issue of whether or not President Biden can unilaterally cancel student debt. And what I hear so often on this issue, and I've talked about this issue with countless people, and the argument that I always hear is, what, student debt is crippling this country, that kids graduate from college and they're crippled by student debt. They've got loans they can't repay. And all of that can be absolutely true. I'm not even suggesting that that's not the case. I interviewed an attorney for my law firm several years ago to come work for me. And this attorney, who just graduated from law school, told me that he had about $175,000 in student debt. And that's a crippling amount of debt. But that's not the question. The question is not whether that the student loan debt is crippling to students in this country, because the answer to that's clearly yes. But the question is it legal? That's the real question, not whether it's needed, but whether it's legal. And that's what was debated at the Supreme Court this very week. And just to recap it for you, all from a legal perspective, all of this, the president's attempt to cancel debt, goes back to a 2001 law. It's called the HEROES Act. And under the HEROES Act, it empowers the president to cancel student debt of soldiers during a time of national emergency. So the question becomes, can the president use that congressional authorization to cancel student debt of non-soldiers, and also in a time when we're not in a national emergency? You may say, well, COVID's a national emergency. Sure it is. At least it was. But as of this year, President Biden himself has said it's no longer a national emergency. The federal government is backing away from national emergency status, and so it's no longer a national emergency. So both of those prongs of the basis for President Biden to unilaterally transfer that debt, because it's not an elimination of debt. Keep in mind, it's a transfer of debt from students to the federal government, and that means to you and me and anyone else who pays income tax. So it's not an elimination. It's a debt transfer. But let's get back to the legal side, because here's what's going to happen at the Supreme Court. I'm going to tell you right now, and my success rate of predicting these cases at the Supreme Court, at least during the past 2 years, is 100%. So I feel like I've got a good track record going in on this. And here's the question, and I use that word for a reason. There's a legal doctrine called the Major Questions Doctrine. Major Questions Doctrine says this. This is constitutional law going back 150 years. And it says this: if the president is going to act on something that involves a major question and that involves power that comes from Congress, then Congress has to speak clearly and definitively to authorize the president to act. That's called the Major Questions Doctrine. I paraphrased it down from a lot of legalese in Latin, but that's essentially what it means. So how does that apply to this case? It applies to this case in the context of, if Congress wanted the president to have the power to waive student loan debt for all students, they would have said so. But they didn't do that. So at the end of the day, when the Supreme Court rules in June, it will be either a 6-3 or a 5-4 decision striking down President Biden's attempt to cancel student debt. Mark it down, write it on your calendar, and then when it happens, you can call on the show and say, Brad, you called it, because that's exactly what's going to happen. You know what else I called is that you're going to want to stick around and listen to the best of Dave Glover, because that's coming up next. This is Brad Young at your service. I'll be here next Wednesday night. Keep listening to KMOX 1120. We are talking about money here on Camo X. Brad Young back for the final segment. And just this week at the Supreme Court, we heard oral arguments on the issue of whether or not President Biden can unilaterally cancel student debt. And what I hear so often on this issue, and I've talked about this issue with countless people, and the argument that I always hear is what student debt is crippling this country, that kids graduate from college and they're crippled by student debt. They've got loans they can't repay. And all of that can be absolutely true. I'm not even suggesting that that's not the case. I interviewed an attorney for my law firm several years ago to come work for me. And this attorney, who just graduated from law school, told me that he had about $175,000 in student debt. And that's a crippling amount of debt. But that's not the question. The question is not whether that the student loan debt is crippling to students in this country, because the answer to that's clearly yes. But the question is it legal? That's the real question, not whether it's needed, but whether it's legal. And that's what was debated at the Supreme Court this very week. And just to recap it for you, all from a legal perspective, all of this, the president's attempt to cancel debt, goes back to a 2001 law. It's called the HEROES Act. And under the HEROES Act, it empowers the president to cancel student debt of soldiers during a time of national emergency. So the question becomes, can the president use that congressional authorization to cancel student debt of non-soldiers, and also in a time when we're not in a national emergency? You may say, well, COVID's a national emergency. Sure it is. At least it was. But as of this year, President Biden himself has said it's no longer a national emergency. The federal government is backing away from national emergency status, and so it's no longer a national emergency. So both of those prongs of the basis for President Biden to unilaterally transfer that debt, because it's not an elimination of debt. Keep in mind, it's a transfer of debt from students to the federal government, and that means to you and me and anyone else who pays income tax. So it's not an elimination. It's a debt transfer. But let's get back to the legal side, because here's what's going to happen at the Supreme Court. I'm going to tell you right now, and my success rate of predicting these cases at the Supreme Court, at least during the past 2 years, is 100%. So I feel like I've got a good track record going in on this. And here's the question, and I use that word for a reason. There's a legal doctrine called the Major Questions Doctrine. Major Questions Doctrine says this. This is constitutional law going back 150 years. And it says this: if the president is going to act on something that involves a major question and that involves power that comes from Congress, then Congress has to speak clearly and definitively to authorize the president to act. That's called the Major Questions Doctrine. I paraphrased it down from a lot of legalese in Latin, but that's essentially what it means. So how does that apply to this case? It applies to this case in the context of, if Congress wanted the president to have the power to waive student loan debt for all students, they would have said so. But they didn't do that. So at the end of the day, when the Supreme Court rules in June, it will be either a 6-3 or a 5-4 decision striking down President Biden's attempt to cancel student debt. Mark it down, write it on your calendar, and then when it happens, you can call on the show and say, Brad, you called it, because that's exactly what's going to happen. You know what else I called is that you're going to want to stick around and listen to the best of Dave Glover, because that's coming up next. This is Brad Young at your service. I'll be here next Wednesday night. Keep listening to KMOX 1120.